Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three, on this Monday, Breeders' Cup week. And that means one of the things that we always do is check in with Tim Schramm and get the lay of the land when it comes to the race, not just the race order. The race order, we kind of, the race order seemingly is locked in the last few years. But there's been tinkering and constant innovation when it comes to the wagering menu. Then, of course, there's also the lead up to the best live money contest of the year, which is the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. Tim Schramm, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good.
That's good. Doing well out here in Del Mar as well.
Well, I'm disappointed to not be there, but we'll cover... We'll cover it the way we always do. And when it comes to what you guys have laid out, we'll come back to BCBC. Let's dive into what, again, is a wagering menu that offers some of the best opportunities of the year over the course of the 2 days.
Yeah, no doubt. We have some exciting news this year. Obviously, we made a few changes to the menu. One of the big additions we put on the Saturday menu is a all-turf pick four. So that'll encompass race 5, 7, 9, and 11, which is obviously four turf races. And full fields, very competitive, so it should be an exciting bet, wager for the players out there. You know, it starts with the fifth race, the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint, and goes to the Maker's Mark Philly and Mare Turf, the seventh race, and then the ninth race is the FanDuel Mile, and obviously caps off with the Breeders' Cup Turf, the 11th race. So 5, 7, 9, 11 on Saturday, and the all-turf pick four.
What's the denomination on this?
Pardon me?
The denomination. Did you make it a...
50 cents is a minimum.
You did make it 50, okay.
Yeah, similar to the all the other pick fours.
I just you know given what Jim Goodman did and the team at Keeneland, I just was curious. Keeneland. I mean, because you were out in front of that as well with your players committee about higher denomination options.
Right, it just matters. We listen to the players a lot, and obviously I'm good friends with, we're all good friends at Breeders' Cup with Keeneland, but I'm a good buddy with Jim Goodman's as well. Just talked to him this morning, check in with him all the time. And, continue to get updates about how that all-turf pick three and pick four were happening at Keeneland. I guess just wanted to, we watched it over the last meet, see how well it did and what the interest was from the players and feedback. And we figured we'd give it a shot as well.
No, it's a natural, and frankly, and one of the topics that came out of Wednesday afternoon, once the pre-entered fields were apparent, was that every turf race oversubscribed essentially. And
yeah, it's amazing. It continues to do that. Obviously, it's very popular, and the reason one of the reasons for that, obviously, we'd have a record number of internationals in the Breeders' Cup this year.
Yeah.
I think in our 156 entries, I think we had, or 196 pre-entries, I think we had 56 from overseas. So, and just to recap that, I think we had, horses from, obviously, Great Britain's 26, Ireland 17, Japan 8, France 2, Argentina, Peru, and South Africa all had 1. So, again, that's one of the reasons for the over subscription of the turf races, but again, it's looking very, very competitive, and those fields are tough, I'll tell you. I mean, I briefly looked at it. I've been so busy with the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge the last couple of days, I haven't got a really chance to really get the PPs out and really look at them, you know. But I kind of will wait to do that when the draw comes today, obviously, in the paddock of Delmar. So I hope to get to the PPs and really start to dig into it a little bit more.
Well, and for those, by the way, that I'm glad you mentioned the draw, because TVG will simulcast at 5:30 Eastern, 2:30 Pacific, and all 14 races will be drawn live. And Nick Luck and Brittany Erton will be the hosts, and a chance to, you know, basically get some decisions. And there are some spots, and most notably the Filly and Mare turf and the mile and a half turf, where and a little bit with the mile, there's the O'Brien horses and some of the cross entry. There's some things that are really up in the air, and usually by today, you know, over the weekend leading up to entry day, draw day, usually those decisions have been kind of announced. And based on what I saw from Marcus Hirsch yesterday, there's real mystery and some intrigue about some final decisions. So we'll be very, very anxious.
Right. I think you're right with that for sure. So that should be obviously an exciting pick four for sure. I wanted to mention another great addition we did this year for the Breeders' Cup is, again, just getting feedback from players. You know, the most important, or most, I shouldn't say important, most popular wagers out there nowadays are the pick fours and pick fives. Yeah. And that's what players like on the big days. They see the great value, at least opportunity for a huge payoff. So the Breeders' Cup added a third pick five on Saturday, a mid pick five. So we obviously have the early pick five like we always did, races one through five. And then the late pick five is always, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 on Saturday. The last couple races going into the Classic, obviously. But we put a middle pick five in there, starting with race three and obviously going to race seven. So,
well, I know, just pulling up... Let me, for those that don't have the race order, I'll mention, you know, obviously the first three races of the day, there's an allowance. There's the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance, the marathon, then the Gold Akova as the third. So the three prequel races, then the Filly and Mare sprint and the turf sprint. That's your first pick five. And then the Gold Akova kicks off that middle pick five. The Gold Akova, Filly and Mare sprint, turf sprint, dirt mile, Filly and Mare turf. That's going to be a big hit, Tim. That thing will...
Oh, yeah, that's a huge one, obviously. It'll be difficult, too, obviously, to hit. So you got to spread, and if you really, really like somebody, you can key off them, obviously. That's where you're going to... You know, make a killing if it comes in, you know.
Well, and the key to the, obviously, this was the discussion point immediately on Wednesday by 12:15, when it was apparent that the dirt races were a little narrow in terms of field size, and that the turf was going to be, every turf race was essentially going to be a full field. And so as a result, you look at a sequence like that with the Gold Akova, you know, the Filly and Mare sprint, there's going to be people who are just going to hang their hat on Gamine. I think there's more involved than that. Then there's the dirt mile, where Life is Good is the principal, and the sprint where, well, actually, the sprint would not be part of the pick five. But the point is, right, the dirt races, people are going to be able to go narrow. And then the turf races are the places where you're going to be able to, you know, to tinker and, you know, and structure your tickets where you can heavy up on the ones you like best and spread enough to catch. From that standpoint, anybody that was worried that it wasn't going to be a great betting, you know, weekend, you can make it a great betting weekend by understanding how to approach these two cards.
Yeah, and if you think it's going to be all chalk on some of these heavy favorites, just look back to 2017. I mean, and when we were last time we were at Del Mar, and the payoffs we had back then, they were astronomical. So those singles that you might have in those strong in those races, sure, they look great on paper. There's no doubt about that. But if you want to take a stand and go against them with a, you know, some kind of other ticket, but that's where the grand slams are made, not so much the home runs, but the, you know, the huge payoffs.
Tim Schramm with us from Breeders' Cup. We're going through the menu. And, Tim, let's talk about the way the pick sixes are going to be laid out.
Okay. Obviously, it's the same as it is every year with a pick six. We're going with a minimum $1 not denomination. And it's the last six races of each card. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 and on Friday. Then, obviously, it's 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 races on Saturday. So, again, the one on Saturday is basically called the Ultra Pick 6, and that was basically made here. The name was given years ago because it was made up of all Breeders' Cup races.
Right.
And so we continue to keep that name, even though it's not, you know, marketed highly out there, but I put it in the program and stuff like that. And every once in a while I'll have a media person call them and say, why do you call it the Ultra Pick 6? Because, you know, there's so many jackpot sixes out there and other names, you know, throughout the years since we started this one. So the Ultra Pick 6 is just a name that was given to the other one because it was the Ultra, because it was basically all Breeders' Cup races. So.
Did you tinker or consider a two-day Pick 6? Didn't we? I'm trying to think if that might have been a Triple Crown
inclusion. No, let's not mention in Breeders' Cup too much. We have it's a difficult wager as it is on Breeders' Cup, and I think a lot of players struggle with it, especially a $2 denomination. But it's a big boys bet, and we wanted to keep it there. So a dollar denomination is serious wager still, by betting in a pick six. But we'll see what happens. I mean, it's kind of pick five and pick four. Obviously, as we mentioned earlier, the most popular nowadays, and maybe because of pick six, it's so difficult to hit. So over the years, you know, I remember years ago, I think 99 might have been the biggest payoff. I think we had over a $3 million payoff on the big pick six. I think it was a single ticket back at Gulfstream. But let's see, what else? We do have a super high five every race. We used to have a jackpot super high five, but we don't have that anymore. We just go on with a super high five every race. I think that's the main changes in the menu past couple of days. I don't know if you wanted to talk a little bit more about the pick six and the actual races in that. I don't give handicapping advice. I quit doing that years ago. So I know better than that. Nobody wants to hear what other people have to say. You know what I mean? I've learned that too. So.
We can certainly tell everybody what how the sequence unfolds. And here on Saturday, the last six, on Saturday, the last six would start with the filly and mare turf, then the sprint, the mile, the distaff, the turf, and the classic. So there's the standard, more or less, layout when it comes to those six. And on Friday, because of the there's only five Breeders' Cup races, the juvenile events, but the Ken Matty, which typically is the Matty is typically a sprint, a turf sprint, is it not?
5 furlong, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. All right, so because that comes down from that's being borrowed from Santa Anita.
Right, and the juvenile, obviously the juvenile's on Friday. Sometimes not as much form there as Saturday, so that makes a betting opportunity. You know, if you know your breeding, if you know your connections, if you know your, just form that these horses have, you can capitalize on that. So any rollover of the pick six would be rolled over to Saturday. Friday's pick six, if it's a rollover, it goes to Saturday, and it's a mandatory payout in the classic. And that goes the same for all the pick fives. Two pick fives on Friday, as well as the early and the middle pick five on Saturday. Any of them roll, they will roll to the late pick five on Saturday. So that has an opportunity to get perhaps one or two rollover or something. It's just some bombs come in, that type of thing.
Nice. Well, and the juvenile, for those that were you know, sort of alarmed at the way the dirt races on Saturday unfolded. You look, not to say that we're not going to have distinct favorites in the two juvenile dirt races,
right,
when it comes to Echo Zulu and Jack Christopher, but there is some open, I would say, you know, some openness to both races. I there's plenty of people that, you know, Hidden Connection has come up already this morning, and you know, Jack Christopher's got the, you know, the two turn question. All you got to do is think back to Bolt Doro at Del Mar, who everybody had anointed as you know, a juvenile winner, you know, beyond reproach, and you know, Good Magic ends up breaking the maiden in the race. So the juveniles are a little more complex than they might be at first glance. And of course, the two turf races are just plain fun. And I can tell you that when it comes to that juvenile turf sprint, Tim, I have not heard one person say, "I'm singling Golden Pal and can't lose." Everybody I hear, it does not want to take Golden Pal at a short price. So the juvenile turf sprint.
Face it, they're 2-year-olds, you know?
Yeah.
You know, a lot can happen. They can act up. They can be a little nervous out there. They can improve tons, you know, on a month-to-month basis. So a lot of opportunity again. If you follow closely during the day, see how they're reacting, and then go from there. But
it's a fun sequence. Whether you play just the pick five, which encompasses all five of the juvenile races, or you fold in that Ken Matty, the sprint would start the Friday pick six. We should also mention the two-day doubles, because we're back, super popular, the juvenile fillies and the juvenile turf all link up to Saturday.
Yeah, these three special daily doubles we implemented a few years ago when the distaff went to the Saturday card, and so we figured we'd go with some juveniles with their matchup on Saturday. So juvenile fillies goes with the distaff. The juvenile turf goes with the turf. The juvenile goes with the classic. So, again, juvenile fillies on Friday. Race 7 goes with the distaff, race 10. And then the juvenile turf, the 10th race on Friday, goes with the turf, which is the 11th race on Saturday. And the juvenile, the 9th race on Friday, goes with the classic, the 12th race on Saturday. So these have been popular wagers. Again, a way to hit a double. Carry it on to the next day. It's always exciting. A lot of people love that juvenile and classic.
Sure.
Because they like the younger ones, concentrate on picking those, and then obviously the classic. They know those horses well if you've been following them, Breeders' Cup Challenge races throughout the year and stuff like that. So
why no turf juvenile turf sprint with the big turf sprint?
The juvenile turf with the turf. Yeah, we have that.
Well, yeah, with the turf sprint. Yeah, why not the two turf sprints?
Oh, the turf sprint. We incorporated these three probably a few years ago. Probably, I don't remember the exact year it was, but
that's
definitely in the. I mean, we thought about more, but you know, we just want to concentrate on these three. Maybe they get these to hit the ground more and get more play and see what happens. But there's definitely interest in these three for sure.
Oh yeah, but, yeah. I will tell you that whether it's a question of the intrigue involved or just the novelty factor, whatever it is, I'm as much a sucker for them as anybody. People love the multi-track wagers and they love the multi-day wagers, and I'm telling you, as many as you throw in, they'll be well received. I don't think you can overdose on these at all, Tim.
Right. We'll definitely consider going on for sure. We look at it every year and kind of make our judgment call based on past performance of them and so forth. But they're successful right now. These three are successful, and people are getting more involved with them as the years go on. So.
Tim, where do we stand? There had been extensive discussion, and I know Paul Matisse and the Players Committee, I know you guys have you know, bounced around, you know, the head-to-head things, and there's been jockey challenge ideas. Has that all been sort of, you know, kind of kept on the shelf for now?
Yeah, I mean, we tried a couple years there for sure, and we've tried it way back years ago. So it just it hasn't got the legs we wanted to. And the more, you know, you don't want to flood the menu for sure. But yeah, the head to heads, it's a nice, you know, we want to obviously try to get do what sports betting is, trying to compare it to that. And so we did a lot of head to heads, Europeans versus Americans and that type of thing. Obviously, there's permissions you have to get when you talk about the jockeys and stuff like that, jockey against that jockey, but it just hasn't got the volume that we wanted to pass. So we're looking at it again and seeing if we can redesign it and make it a little bit more interesting.
Now, there's plenty to keep us engaged, without a doubt, and looking forward to having these fields locked in. And let's turn our attention to the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, and as I referenced, what has essentially become the absolute crown jewel in live money contest play every year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is and really has been. I mean, this will be our 13th year of having the BCBC. You know, we started back in 2009. We had 75 players show up at Santa Anita for the contest. And over the years, it's just grown almost double digits every single year. Last year, we had 430 players play from Keeneland, even though most of them were not at Keeneland because of obviously COVID, the virus. So people played online. Horse players, guys and girls, became familiar, if they weren't at all before, or intimidated by the internet and by the playing from home, they had to learn. Because, again, just like anything else in society, kind of pushed us forward to where we should have been at that point. But a lot of players are a lot more comfortable playing on the computer now. So we see that in these contests. And I expect nothing but the same in this year for the 2021. So I think our all-time record is actually down at Santa Anita when we were there in 2019. We had 457 players play, and they wagered about $5.7 million at that time. So we're expecting over $6 million to be wagered from the players in the BCBC, and we're expecting to beat that 457 record this year for sure. So.
Tim, a couple of things. Deadlines for sign-up?
Deadlines for sign-up vary. Basically, we try to shut off. We have a number of different outlets. So what makes it difficult strenuous, I should say. Not so much difficult because we've been doing it for years. But we basically have eight different places we've got to gather information from to put a leaderboard together. And those places, obviously, the brick-and-mortar places is obviously the Del Mar, the host track. A lot of players, probably half of the players, will come here. And then we got players playing from Santa Anita, Gulfstream Park, as well as Monmouth Park. So that's the four brick-and-mortars. And then we have online. You can play with our partner, TVG.com. We also offer it on ExpressBet and IraBet. And actually, we're implementing a pilot program with HPI.com this year. So we have a couple players that have talked to us and taken part of that pilot program. So
Tommy Masses, in other words.
Tommy Masses? Tommy Masses isn't one that's on the pilot program, but I did speak to him. I thought he was going to come to, he's a big Keeneland fan, so I always think
yes, he
Keeneland.
Is. Yeah.
Yeah, so he would come to the track if he's coming, but... he's a great guy, Tommy, obviously.
and a former...
He's a 2015 champ of the BCBC.
That's when he burst on the scene, Tim. That's when you guys foisted him on all of us. It was six years ago.
Yeah, on all you. He's been part of our campaign for a long time. I've known Tommy since... I think I met him way back at Woodbine. So he'll tell you a story when we met. He said, I changed his life. It always makes me feel good.
So. He's one of they say
it, I usually change people's life in a bad way.
No, he's one of the great characters. One of the great characters around.
He got a great heart too.
To reiterate this, Del Mar obviously, and because of the facility, I'm curious because the facility, if I recall from 4 years ago, There's several locations, right? Because it is kind of a nook and cranny building.
Yeah, it's a small venue, and yeah, we are letting BCBC players play from a number of different areas at Del Mar. We have the first floor, the regular simulcast room. It's called the Hacienda Room. We have a lot of players there. We have some players up in the Horseman's Lounge on the third floor, and people also in the Pacific Classic on the fourth floor. And we even have players down in the VIP area, 17 hands, if you're familiar with Del Mar. So they'll be playing there as well. So, yeah, it is kind of a small area where you had to put players in different areas, but they're quality areas, you know, players like
that. Oh, sure.
So,
well, and,
so answering your question initially about the deadline, I mean, we'll take, obviously, entries at the track up until the first post, and I think we'll be all going almost the first post on ExpressBet. TVG and Ira Betts opt to close the evening prior so they can get more organized and get thorough with their entries. So on HPI.com, that's just a pilot program that we have a few players in. So we plan to open it up to Canada full boat next year.
All right, and usually, and I'm going to check the link. I'll put the links up. See, everything is going to a sort of an entry purchase page, from what I can tell.
We had to use the Del Mar ticket software this year.
Okay.
In our website. So it's kind of different. It's not as smooth as prior years, but it's still workable. As a matter of fact, I think I've only gotten one or two calls from players. I might have a difficulty, and that's actually more. That's less than I have every year. So again, I think these players from playing online have got to come to learn it better. You know, so they're not as intimidated, they're not as confused when they go on and try to buy something. Just like buying a ticket. That's all.
Yeah.
You got how many tickets you want, that type of thing. So,
Tim, I am seeing the one note with the Naira Betts side New York residents only. So what about those of us in New York?
Well, those of you in New York obviously can play from the other ADW venues as well as come out to Del Mar. There is a, since the details of this, I won't go into too much, but basically the Naira Betts wagers are considered on track.
Right.
In the eyes of New York. So, and New York has a rule basically says, hey, you can have a contest, but most of these contests that you have, they've got to be a majority of Naira races.
Right.
If they're not majority of Naira races, the New York, you know, residents can't come, you know, get in the contest. So that's unfortunate, but that's just something that maybe they can look to change. But it does affect the New York people, but we have options for them. They can go to TVG ExpressBet, you know, that
right
type of thing. So,
all right.
Yeah.
FYI for Naira Betts players, make sure you've made, you know, because you're talking about a $10,000 buy-in. So I would not wait until, you know, 11:30 on Friday, to go try to reboot your ExpressBet or your TVG account if you're going to play this way. So,
right.
Yeah, get out in front of this. And that's one of the things that starting today, we remind everybody, fund your accounts well in advance of Friday. Do not wait until, you know, your first pick five play to go try to fund. If there's any hiccup, sometimes, you know, your expiry date on your card has expired and you got to change it, and there isn't one thing that hasn't tripped up somebody on race day, Friday or Saturday. So fund your accounts, get way out ahead of it, and
right.
You know, who any of these places, you know, you obviously, you know, Monmouth, you know, get a hold of Brian Skirka and Nate Newby and the team at Santa Anita if you want to play there,
right.
And at Gulfstream, et cetera. And,
right.
You know,
Sherry Holmes down at Gulfstream.
There you go.
Yeah. BreedersCup.com/BCBC is where you can register. And if you have any questions, obviously you can call me. My number's all over the place. So.
Well, Tim at BreedersCup.com as well,
Tim,
if you want to write to Tim.
Drop me an email. It's easy enough to remember, Tim@BreedersCup.com. So I'm looking forward to another great challenge this year. We get
Always, always.
Yeah, it's big money now. It's so big, and these players are so involved with this, and they look forward to it. You know, there's a couple key times during the year that I personally like. You know, the Masters or Triple Crown or March Madness, that type of thing, and Breeders' Cup for the wagering aspect of it is tops everything for me. So it's just a great weekend. So it's a horse wagerer's dream anyway.
Well, and Tim, before we go, I got one question that just came in.
Sure.
I don't know if this falls into your bailiwick or not. Vegas and Arizona, what is the signal status with people wanting to bet in either venue?
Yeah, Vegas, obviously no ADWs out there. If you're a resident of Vegas, you can't get an ADW. If you don't have an account, you can't participate by way of an ADW account an ADW. So your option is to come up to Del Mar. And concerning the Arizona, I can't comment on that, but I know they're working on it, and I'm thinking they're going to have a resolution by the time we resolve it, by the time we have up. But I can't comment on it, really.
Very good. All right. I just wanted to, because I got two emails, and it occurred to me to ask you both.
Yeah, we're all concerned about the Arizona issue that goes on, and we're trying to resolve it. We're hoping, obviously, I understand their frustration being from Arizona, but hopefully we can get this thing situated. But it's at some point, it's a lot of parties involved. So
all right, let me know if there's a piece of information for me to disseminate during the week. Let me know.
Yeah, I'll do that for sure. Sounds good, Steve.
Tim Schramm, everybody, who has helped build the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge into just one of the handicapping and horse playing highlights of the year in the contest world. And best of luck to everybody out there, Tim. Sorry I can't be there.
Okay, you be good. See ya.
Thank you. Tim Schramm, everybody. And there you go. There's your betting menu. And going to get everybody organized to attack these 2 days of wagering. One of the things that you need to attack it is the opinion of some of the greatest eyes in the game. Gary Young, good morning.
Hi, how are you, Steve?
Good. I'll say again, I'm sorry I'm sorry I don't have you sitting right next to me there outside of Craig Dato's office. That would have been the preferred venue. Although when I came for Pacific Classic, you called to me in Hammer, but we never saw you.
Yeah, that was a busy week for me. The place we were staying in had some difficulties, and that was a busy week, but I mean, I'll definitely be there this week. That's for damn sure.
Well, Gary, we're starting to get starting to get organized, and by about 6 o'clock tonight, everybody will have post positions, and we'll be able to take a serious look. But this was a more contentious couple of days of final works than we might normally see. What was your take on this Latruska situation?
You know, I mean, most of the time, most of the time, they allot like the first 10 or 15 minutes after the break to be Breeders' Cup only horses. I don't think that she's going to win or lose the race because of that workout or anything. But, I mean, I guess he wasn't too happy about it. But, let's face it, every racetrack in America, when you don't do something like have it open for Breeders' Cup only horses, that could happen at any racetrack in America, and it happens every day, but it doesn't happen to a horse that is a big favorite for a Breeders' Cup race, so it becomes big news.
Well, exactly, and let's get we're not going to judge Latruska's potential in the distaff based on what happened there.
No, she's not going to win or lose the race because of what happened there, and we're not going to judge her chances by what happened there either. I mean, you know, she was just out for obviously an easy leg stretcher, on Breeders' Cup week, and she happened to hook up in company. I mean, it's not the end of the world. That was my take on it. It's just something else that got way more blown up than I think it deserved to be, but it did. So what happened, happened.
Exactly. I feel similarly. Well, let's focus mostly on the main track runners, and in terms of what you saw over the weekend, talk a little bit. Start with the feature in particular, as we seemingly have a lineup in this classic area that makes potential for a very memorable confrontation.
Yeah, it's. This is what John Gaines probably had in mind, where you have three-year-olds looking to come in to, take over for the best older horse in the country. So this is exactly what he had in mind, and it's the three-year-old crop for every most everyone agree it's been a much stronger than average three-year-old crop, and now we're going to find out. On Judgment Day, just how strong it was, because obviously, Nixco he's taken no prisoners this year. I think this is his biggest test, but he's going to be favored to do it, and pretty tough to fault him, So we will see.
The group of West Coast horses, I mean, obviously Idle Now is gone, but six of the horses out of this nine have been preparing on the West Coast, and that includes Max Player, who is actually getting some murmuring, particularly by the sheep players, as to having some real potential to impact this race somewhere on the chart. But talk about the principles first in terms of Medina Spirit and Hot Rod Charlie and what you've seen from them since the preps.
I think they're both coming into the race training as good as you can have them train. They both are similar. They weren't the book one type of horses, but they've made it to where they're that they're gonna and the other three-year-old, Essential Quality, he is he's a blue blood that was bred to be something special from day one. But the other two, they make for great stories. I mean, they were bought for, in horse racing terms, they were bought for not much money, and they've made it to the biggest day. And I would think that there's four or five horses in this race that will probably, if they win, they deserve to be horse of the year, no doubt about it. Obviously, if any of the three-year-olds win, I would think they would deserve to be three-year-old of the year and horse of the year. So that's my opinion. Hot Rod Charlie is just he brings it every time. Flavion's been working him, and he's worked terrific. He's worked terrific, and Medina has been working for the last, it seems like, 3 months with Ackman, who's a 108 and change sprinter and a good horse, and he's grown quite a bit over the last couple of months, and we'll see what happens.
Gary, and I won't. Obviously, you've got a very key tie to Medina, so I won't obligate you on that front. But from what you're seeing and knowing what Nick's go, what his position is going to be, I mean, how hot do you expect this pace to be? I mean, it just seems like there's too many horses that are front end types that we have to get an honest pace here, do we not?
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything that quite has Nick's go type of speed, or obviously with Medina, we're just going to leave it up to Johnny V, but, excuse me, I'm sorry about my throat. Nick's go, I don't, I don't know if anyone's going to run with them. I don't know if we are. I don't know if anyone is. And, you know, it would certainly, I mean, to go head up with them would certainly be a tall task to, A, win the war, and then more so than that, win the race. I mean, you'd have, you know, first you'd have to win the battle with him, and then you'd have to hold off everyone else. But, yeah, it looks like for sure there's going to be an honest pace, but we'll see. We will see. It's a very big tactical, more than, you know, I mean, it isn't every year that the horse that's the favorite in the Breeders' Cup Classic is a horse that looks like he could be lead alone. I mean, I guess Pharaoh was like that at Keeneland, but this horse is a very fast horse, and he's really came into his own this year. You know, the mile and a quarter, maybe be a little bit further than his preferred distance, but he certainly didn't look like that in the Whitney. But then again, no disrespect to those horses that he beat in the Whitney. I think he's taken on a different field of horses today.
Let me ask you before we talk about some of the sprint the principles and the distaff and actually juvenile or two, I do want you to give me a feel for Max Player and Tripoli. Max Player has been out there, like all the Asmussen horses, has been out there at this point for, you know, weeks on end, and has got five recorded Santa Anita breezes leading up, and of course Tripoli, we kind of loved him in the Pacific Classic. The Awesome Again, he never looked comfortable or like he was going to be involved, but gets to come back to Del Mar. Where do we come out on the two of them?
Well, Max Player, his workouts here were decent. I think you know, Steve and Scotty, they took him down to Del Mar, and they liked the track better down there that they trained over. He's he's worked decently. You know, I respect the hell out of the barn and the horse, but he wouldn't be in my top three choices. He wouldn't.
What'd you make of Tripoli and you know what's gone on with him from the move to dirt and you know the Pacific Classic win? You know, you win a Pacific Classic, you got to think that it projects well, you know, to come back at 10 furlongs on the same surface next Saturday.
I think when the old folks home in about 20 or 30 years from now, that won't be the Pacific Classic that we will. It wasn't quite the same as when Medallia d'Oro and Candy Ride lined it up at the quarter pole that day. It's a little this version really wasn't quite when those two lined it up at the quarter pole that day.
You're the greatest. talk about the Distaff Fillies and their preparations from what you've seen. Clairiere is getting plenty of attention as an alternate.
I was down there yesterday. I'm at Santa Anita today. She looked terrific coming through the stretch yesterday. I know the final time wasn't necessarily flashy, but I thought she looked terrific coming to the wire yesterday for Steve.
The two Bafferts, as time goes by, and Private Mission.
You know, as time goes by, by Bob's own admission, he hasn't quite figured her out yet. At one time, it looked like the sky was the limit to her, and she had slight mental issues and everything. Did she work good yesterday? Yes, she did. You know, Private Mission is, he's got a chance of, I mean, you know, you never really think about getting a price wagering on a Baffert filly, but she's going to be a decent price. And I definitely think that she is moving forward at a very rapid rate. You know, one thing Breeders' Cup always offers the gambler is there's always a bunch of really good training horses at good prices. And if you land on the right one and, you know, it can definitely make your week. Let's face it.
Gary, if you were, since you went down to Del Mar, I wasn't sure, you know, where you chose to watch over the last couple of days, but having gone...
I was just there yesterday. I'm on the fourth floor right outside the Turf Club, right on the wire. That's where we clack all the time in the summer, and it's a great viewing spot. There's a lot less obstructions there than on the second floor, and that's my office.
Nice. Then let me ask you, because
the pay is a little spotty, but the view is killer.
Then one horse I should ask you about was what'd you make of Art Collector? Because that was actually a more important half mile, maybe, than some people realize.
He's a very athletic horse, medium sized horse, it appeared, and very well balanced. He bounced around there, looked okay. So, he will be a huge price, and I mean, but not a, he'll be double digit price. Obviously, it's his biggest test, but he looks really like an athletic neat horse to be around. He does.
Talk about the sprinters, and you've watched Jackie's Warrior prepare. You're certainly familiar with Dr. Shivel and CZ Rock, although CZ Rockets at San Luis Rey, but
yesterday he came through yesterday in easy 3/8 and 35 and 3, but he came through.
Some sprint thoughts, Shivel and Jackie's.
You know, Jackie's Warrior, he's built like a tank. I mean, if you wanted to like clone what a sprinter is supposed to look like, that's what he's built like. Steve's done a terrific job with him. As usual, Steve's last work before the race is just the maintenance work. He came through looking okay. Dr. Shivel worked good. He did work good. I mean, he's definitely by far the West Coast leading contender in the race, and this is his judgment day. I mean, he's running for an Eclipse Award like a lot of other horses are. His last race was impressive, but I mean, what Pratt did without with only one rein,
right?
I mean, with the rein came loose, that was one of the more amazing things I've ever seen. You know, I mean, it really was the horse. Just ran around there like he didn't even know the difference, you know. But like I told Flavie and I texted him that night, if you had any constipation problems at the start of the day, they were definitely relieved by the day by the time the day ended. And he laughed like hell. I mean, it was
the greatest. Gary, I want to slip in before I ask you about Gamine. I want to slip in the Dirt Mile, which is a race that has gotten very little discussion, and there's a few things that are going on in here, and that includes Eight Rings, who's kind of feeling his way, Ginobili, who is very tough at Del Mar. You've got the likes of Silver State, who, you know, has been out at Santa Anita with the Asmussen String, Restrained Vengeance, and Snapper Sinclair is going to go here. This race actually might be a little bit more interesting than people are giving it credit for.
Well, yeah, I mean, the life is good factor in there. He is to the mile kind of like what Nick Go is to the Classic. I mean, he probably is going to be in front, and he's displayed a lot of talent, and again, do you want to run with him? Probably not. You know, I mean, if you go head up with him, it's not going to help you. But he's been an unbelievable talent from the time he started working out here, and it's if you beat him, you're going to get paid. But a wide open race after if you beat him. There's a lot of horses that can lay claim to having a really a shot in there if life is good does not fire. And you will get paid, like I said.
Let's touch on, before I ask you about some juveniles, let's touch on Gamine and the situation involved here, because there is a hint that if Bella Sophia draws inside her and engages her, isn't CC kind of waiting in the wings to gobble them both up?
I guess that could happen. I mean, yeah, you know, the post position draw would probably have a lot of a lot to do with what strategy is in this race. Bella Sophia worked fine yesterday. She's a terrific find at the OBS sale and by Nick Saluzzo, and she worked good. I think it's the best horse Gamine's ran against in some time, but then again, Gamine is the queen of one-turn filly racing in America and has been for quite a while, and it's going to be up to someone to try to knock that throne off of her head. But she just grabs hold of it and goes. I mean, she's about as fast for a quarter mile as you'd want as we've had around for a while. I mean, Johnny Vita's, I mean, there's no urging at all, and she just rips off fractions that are very rare.
Let's touch on the couple of the juveniles and Gary Young with us with an initial post final work thoughts, and it does seem like the mid American candidates in the juvenile fillies, Gary, when it comes to an Eastern Echo Zulu and Hidden Connection, Juju's Map. But I was impressed with D'Amato and Ain't Easy on the stretch out in the Chandelier win. That Into Mischief filly is okay, and curious your thoughts.
I bet on her that day. She worked unbelievable for the race. She ran to the work. Probably it's a step up, but I mean, I don't think she's without a chance. And obviously, Echo Zulu is the same as Life is Good, where if you beat her, you're going to get paid. You know, you are. But I would not be surprised. She's worked good out of the race too, Phil Philly, and I would not be surprised to see her be right in there down on the wire. I wouldn't.
I'm glad I asked. And let's round out the dirt race discussion with Gary Young about the juveniles. And, of course, Jack Christopher going to come in as a deserving favorite. Little different MO for Chad Brown than 4 years ago when Bolt Doro had the target on his back. And Chad wins with Good Magic. Here we've got, I think, some West Coast horses that are going to be square numbers. That includes that Oviatt class, who's getting plenty of attention. I don't know much about the maiden winner, Barossa. Some thoughts about what we're going to see among the boys in the juvenile Friday.
Barossa was very good the other morning. Oviatt class, I did not like his works going into the last race. He's worked much better for this race. Once again, you know, Keith DeSormo looking to do what he did with Texas Red, where there's a meltdown up front, and it looks like it's a video game coming around the turn that day. He was passing, horses were stopping in front of him, and he was just flying past the horse every stride he took. That's what kind of trip he will be looking for today. I don't think California could win that race, but I don't think it's the strongest, deepest group of two-year-old colts. I think Baffert has some horses that are just coming along that might be as good as his representation in the juvenile. Jack Christopher was very impressive. He's by Munnings, who's a tremendous sire. Sometimes they're better around one turn than two. And, his race at Belmont was a one-turn race. He's going two turns this time. It's something he hasn't done before, but we'll see if he does it. His last race was very impressive, and And, you know, there were some horses that were supposed to give him a test that day, and they didn't show up, but he certainly did. And, you know, it's your basic East versus West matchup that you get in the juvenile every year.
Gary, can't thank you enough. Great way to end this day one coverage leading toward the draw this afternoon. I'm sorry I won't see you, but hope to talk to you one more time before Friday.
What time is the draw today, Steve?
5:30 on Television Games.
Okay. I will tune that in, and I'll see you when I get down. I'll see you when I get down, and maybe you and Hammer and I, we can get our heads together one time.
Well, Gary, I'm unfortunately not able to come. I had a little health.
That's right.
Yeah.
I forgot.
Yeah. So they ruled me off. They ruled. I'll talk to you though. All right.
I will, Steve. It won't be the same without you. But let's touch base again before we get the ball off on Friday.
Gary Young, everybody, as good as it gets, and as well as Tim Schramm, Mig, and Kevin Kirstein as day one leading toward Friday's Breeders' Cup. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9 here on Sirius XM, podcast archive, etc., on the website, and we will talk to you tomorrow. We'll have Fields to go over and get Sirius, and from Sirius XM at the races. Thanks, everybody.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.